Welcome to Viridios Capital's Reaching Net Zero podcast. I'm your host, Tom Godfrey, and in this episode, we look at seed banks and talk with Jill Wagner. Jill runs Viridios' seed bank business and has been doing native forest restoration for 28 years. Jill has developed projects in South America, Africa, Central Asia, India, and the United States. And for the past 14 years, she's managed the Hawaii Island Seed Bank, which banks a staggering 30 million seeds. As the world turns to reforestation as one of the key methods for meeting its net zero commitments, seed banking is becoming increasingly important. Jill, welcome to the Reaching Net Zero podcast.
Hello. Thank you so much for having me, Tom.
It's a pleasure. Now, look, why don't we start? Could you set the scene for us? What's it like living in Hawaii, surrounded by some of the world's most incredible tropical rainforests?
I love Hawaii, and I have a real connection to it. The tropical ecosystems in Hawaii are unique and very beautiful. And the rainforest, many of the plants are endemic. They don't exist anywhere else in the world. So it's very special, and also it's dynamic. It's the youngest land on the planet. We have an active volcano that's making new land right now.
Amazing. It's incredible. I've had a little bit of time in Hawaii, and it is such a stunning, stunning place. Now, tell us, seed banking, I'm sure a lot of people won't be familiar with it. What led to your career in seed banking?
I started doing forest restoration in Hawaii about 28 years ago, and at that time, there were no seed banks in Hawaii. So the way people traditionally did forest restoration was they would collect seeds from a nearby reference site, and they would bring that seed into a nursery and propagate plants for their project. But we depended on nature, so if there was no flowering or seeding, we wouldn't be able to get seed. Also, there were mast years. That happens, and masting is something that what happens is a tree will skip a year or maybe skip several years in its seed production. And so we just sort of went with that, and at that time, this restoration wasn't as large as it is now. So in 2008, the Hawaii Wildfire Organization provided me with a grant to start a seed bank, and I really found that to be a helpful thing. It was originally as a mitigation for wildfire, and it's very important to save seed for wildfires because especially in the tropics, if you have a wildfire and you don't reseed with native seeds, you get a whole lot of weeds coming up and quickly taking over an area. So that was the original beginning of seed banking for me.
Sounds great. Tell me, you know, I'm obviously new to seed banking. How does the process work? So if you're setting up a seed bank, where do you go to get the seeds? What then happens to them? Maybe if you could step the listeners through how that process works.
Yes, seed banking is the first part of the restoration cycle. So everything starts with the seed. First, you go into a reference, a forest that's nearby and that you want to build a habitat based on, and you collect seeds. And projects that don't collect their own seeds, buy seeds from somebody who will do that and maybe grow the plants for them. Then you take those seeds and you process it. All seed has a chaff or a pulp, and so you have to clean that seed. Then you take it into a nursery and you propagate plants, and then you take those seedlings into the field and you plant those, and then you maintain and monitor that forest, and hopefully you'll have natural regeneration. So natural regeneration is one of the measures that we have to see if a forest restoration is successful, and that's the flowering and seeding of the plants that we outplant. So seed banking is the first process of the restoration cycle. And if we don't properly clean those seeds when we collect, and dry them, then the seed can rot or mold. So we can lose that seed. And a lot of projects are collecting large quantities of seed, but they're not handling it properly so that they can save it for a year or for 10 years or for 100 years. And so that seed is only limited to that year of planting. And we want to really expand that.
A lot of people get exposed to this a little bit. So if you're flying and they say, hey, do you want to offset your emissions? Or maybe it's some sort of interaction you have in the workplace where they say, here, if you put in a little bit of money, we'll plant a tree, which tends to be, I guess, the consumer-facing part of reforestation. What sits behind that? So behind those pledges, behind those offers that are being put forward by the companies, how big is this seed banking network around the world that enables those services and offers to consumers to happen?
Well, this decade is called the Decade of Restoration. The United Nations calls it the Decade of Restoration. And so what we are trying to do has really never been done on the scale in human history. We are taking on the project of rehabilitating and reforesting the earth all over the world, because we have cut down and reduced the forests and we've reduced biodiversity. And of course, we humans have a massive carbon footprint. So we have to do something to mitigate that. And the natural carbon capture is the lungs of the earth, the trees that are creating that sequestration and providing us with oxygen as a byproduct. So it's very critical. In addition to that, what's also very critical for carbon is biodiversity. So in order to have a really good carbon project, we also need to have biodiversity. And I can talk about that more, because that's one of the challenges that we have. And then seed banking is a really good solution for that.
Got it. Well, maybe just step back a little bit to the carbon markets. You touched on it there. So really, when we look at these big reforestation projects and the challenges the world faces in having to essentially recreate these amazing forest environments, seed banking, I assume, is at the heart of that. Really, the only way we're going to achieve it is through seed banking. And so what role do you see seed banking playing in the voluntary carbon market and indeed the compliance markets?
That's correct. I think that seed banking, as I said, seed is the first part of the restoration cycle. And unless we amass massive quantities of seeds, we cannot scale properly. Because if you look at environmentalism and you go back to the beginning of it, which people arguably call it at Rachel Carlson's book, 1962, Silent Spring, that was the beginning of the environmental movement, because people didn't know they were harming the environment with DDT and other chemicals before that time. So it's very young. We're talking about 1962. First, it started with single species restoration, and then it evolved into ecosystems restoration, which is what we're doing today. And so we are doing something that is very, very large and very ambitious. And the only way we can really make that happen is with banking seed. We can collect seed, but we have to properly handle it, because it's a living thing. Seeds have a lifespan and they will die. But if you put them into a dormant state, if you dry them and desiccate them, then you can store them for decades or hundreds of years. So that's where seed banking plays a critical role, and it's a game changer, because it allows us to have much more opportunity than we would have if we just collect from year to year.
You mentioned there the importance of managing the seeds correctly. What are some of the biggest challenges faced by the seed banking industry? Obviously, there's the managing the seeds, but how does it scale? How is it going to get to a position whereby it will meet the challenge of net zero and helping the world reforest?
Well, there are a few challenges. One of them is that today the seed collectors are aging out. So a lot of the seed collectors are older and at the end of their career, and we need many more seed collectors. So that's one thing. It's a great opportunity to teach people about seed collecting and to get a lot more seed collected. And then we have challenges with climate disruption. So we have increasing wildfires, floods, droughts, high winds, and all of these things put pressure on ecosystems. If the mother trees are not able to flower and seed, then we're going to have a limit on what we can collect. Then when we collect, my argument is that we need to collect now while we can, because we don't know what's going to happen in the next 20 years, and the time is now if we want to scale. Once we do that, then we have a lot of opportunity and a lot of choices that we can make. So that's the other thing. The other thing I want to say is that seed, if we bank seed now, we can basically leave something for the next generation. It's very important to collect and to save some seed for the next generation so that they have a healthy planet and a resource to work with in order to keep going.
If we don't collect the seed, if that opportunity is lost, what will be the impact on the planet?
Well, we're seeing it already, because there are not enough seed banks in the world as it is now that store. There are only 400 seed banks in the world globally that store native seeds, and we need tens of thousands of seed banks. So this is a huge opportunity that we are taking on and that we really want to support, the building of seed banks globally. And if we don't do that, what happens is that people plant what is available. And people have told me, I've talked to many people all over the world who are doing large-scale forestry projects, and if they can't get what they need, then often they become desperate and have to use maybe single species or just a handful of species, and that does not create a resilient project. That doesn't create a resilient habitat. So that's one thing, because monocultures and low species plantings tend to crash. They get issues with fungus and insects and pressures that cause them to be what is called brittle. And so they don't have the resiliency that we need to have to move into the future. And so that's very, very important. Forests live for 1,000 years. And if we have a forest and it crashes in 50 or 100 years, that's a baby forest. We need to create healthy systems. And in order to do that, biodiversity is absolutely the way to make that happen.
So demand, obviously we're seeing a lot of people making commitments to net zero. There's a lot of talk about forestry, reforestation projects, Red Plus and the like. Is there enough supply of seed at the moment to service the coming demand as we push towards 2030 and then 2050? Clearly there is going to be a huge increase in demand for seed. Where are we sitting at the moment in terms of global seed supply?
Oh, we're in bad shape, unfortunately. We are not in good shape. We need a lot more seed. And I talk to people who are doing projects all over the world, and they need to collect regional seed, and they need to really scale in order to do it. They're making commitments very large. We're talking about tens of thousands of hectares. These are not the old projects that were happening, 10 and 20 years ago. It's a different ballgame now, because we're really pressured by climate change. So we've got to up the game, and we've got to start really building seed banks, building capacity globally. And we've got to train more collectors, but it's an opportunity to provide local people, indigenous people, with jobs. And it gives also an incentive for people to protect forests. I spoke to somebody this week in Uganda, and he told me that people are seeing the value of forests because they see that they can create a resource out of the seed collection that they do, that that's valuable to them too. They need the standing trees. It's very, very important.
What are we seeing in terms of the cost of seed, given the increased demand and the supply constraint? Are we seeing the cost of seed to support these reforestation projects increasing?
I'm not sure about that. I think that what I've seen that happens is that large projects, if they can't find the seed that they need, they tend to use what is available. That's very dangerous, because if you're using non-native species, you can all introduce all kinds of problems into a region. And of course, as I mentioned earlier, you can also risk with disease and pests into that system. So I think what I've seen is that large-scale projects are really doing what they can with what is available now. And I'm saying what we need to do is start really push on building capacity. And that's gonna drive the prices of seeds, the availability of seeds, and the ability of projects to be successful. Because for me, what I really want to see is a healthy planet, and a planet that has the diversity that we have now, that we don't keep reducing biodiversity for the next generation.
You mentioned there the opportunity to build capacity. What are some of the other opportunities for seed banking?
Well, I think the way that I'm approaching it is to be very flexible. So what I'm finding is that the large projects need large seed banks. And so we need to build something that can store what they need based on their project size. Smaller projects can't afford large seed banks. They need something to get them started. So the way I'm conceptualizing it is to create something that it is workable depending on the project size. And that will give us a real opportunity to scale and to be as global, as far-reaching as we can be.
In terms of the nature of the different seeds, is there anything, any subtlety like that you've seen? What makes a seed unique?
Well, I think, what people need to be really clear on is that every region of the world has unique forests and unique seeds, and it's maybe not as much as Australia and Hawaii. Some regions have crossover because they're part of continents that have a lot of mixing, and countries have habitats that sort of cross over. But I think the message is that each region has unique seeds, and that those people need to collect those seeds of the region. Because what happens is, do you know the two most popular plant species to grow globally? One is eucalyptus and the other is a pines. And those are great. Eucalyptus is great for Australia and pine is good for where it's unique to. But it's overlooking these beautiful hardwoods that occur in places and that can create a huge amount of value to tropical hardwoods or even in temperate regions that will add increased value of both seeds and these forests. So I think that's the kind of the message when I talk about being unique to a region. Yeah.
And tell me, what's your vision for Viridius seed banking?
I want to create a couple of size seed banks that will address the needs of there's different users. There's government users, that do big commitments to do big scale. They need large seed banks. There are carbon projects that are driven by the carbon market, making commitment to do a project for 30 years, let's say, and receive their funding through this carbon mechanism. They need large seed banks. Then you have nonprofits and you have local communities that are trying to break into this, and they need seed banks as well, but they don't have the money. Maybe they're not to scale yet. They want to be a carbon project, but they still need to collect their seeds. So I'm trying to create different price points and size seed banks so that Viridios can be the, you know, the point of the source of seed banks. We really have an opportunity, and I want to use that to its fullest capacity. So that's my vision.
If we were to speak again in 2030, how much of an impact do you think seed banking will have had in helping the world meet its net zero commitments?
I think it's huge, and I'm wholeheartedly committed to this mission. So if we were to speak in 2030, I will be working on it and very happy with all of the new seed collectors all over the world and seed banks that are saving their region's unique seeds. And I'll be thrilled to see forest restoration projects that are sequestering carbon naturally, creating habitat for animals and insects, and providing wild places that is most critical element for keeping humans sane and happy.
Finally, if you were to give some advice to the young Jill Wagner 28 years ago before you started this amazing career in seed banking, what would you say to her?
I would have said, save seed now. Do not wait. Every time we lose a mother tree, we lose genetics from that tree. It's very, very critical. If you're doing this work, you understand that every time we lose a tree, we lose that biodiversity and the resilience. So I would say, start collecting now. Don't wait.
Jill, thank you so much for joining the Reaching Net Zero podcast. I'm sure you've planted a lot of seeds in the minds of our listeners.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it.